heard sirens and glanced out the window next to him.
"Cops!"
he yelled at Charlie. She shot another head before she looked at him and nodded. "Go," she told him, not even out of breath. No fear or panic or even anger in her dark brown eyes. "And tell Uncle Will we said hi." Max started to go after the men who'd managed to get out the door, but Charlie called her back. "We have to get Stevie." Max glanced around at the carnage. "Where the fuck is she?" Charlie pointed up and, yep, that's where their baby sister was, again hanging from the ceiling, but now with part of some guy hanging from one of her fangs, a part she was not going to want to give up. Shifted Stevie tended to play with her prey and guard it territorially, like most house cats. "Dude," Max told her sister, "we don't have time to calm her down." "I've got it." Charlie moved closer to her sister, but not right under her, because she didn't want any more blood dripping on her. "All right, you," she said, pointing a finger at her sister. "You get down here right now. Right now, Stevie McKilligan. This instant." Stevie lowered her eyes and made a little mewling sound. She took a step back, still on the ceiling, not wanting to give up her prize. "Don't you dare run away from me, Stevie. You come down here right now. This minute." Stevie released her grip on the ceiling and came crashing to the floor. "Spit it," Charlie ordered her baby sister. "Spit it." Annoyed, Stevie spit the torso out of her mouth. "Shift back to human. Right now." With just a thought, Stevie returned to her human form. Now naked and covered in blood, she stood there, eyes downcast. It wasn't shame, though. Charlie knew that. It was more like contrition, like a little girl caught tearing the head off her sister's favorite doll. "Cops are securing the building and coming up the stairs," Max announced after checking the windows. "Let's move." The three of them ran out of the lab and up the stairs until they reached the roof. There was a long summer dress already waiting on the ledge of the building. Max tossed it to Stevie, and she slipped it on while Charlie went from corner to corner, trying to figure out where the cops had set up. She found that they hadn't made it to the back of the building yet, so she motioned her sisters over. "Go," she ordered Stevie. "Have you lost your mind?" Stevie asked, already beginning the panic process all over again. "When you consider the physics of..." Pressing her hand against Stevie's chest, Max shoved her sister off the roof. Screaming, Stevie fell, but as she neared the ground, she suddenly turned over and landed on all fours. "Always with the drama," Max announced before following her sister over. Sadly, she didn't have any cat in her, so she landed hard, the concrete under her cracking from the impact. But the honey badger still got to her feet and shook it off. Charlie got on the ledge and was preparing to jump when she felt eyes on her. She spun around, gaze searching all the nearby buildings. She saw the scopes, the rifles, the women holding them. She bared her fangs in rage, and in answer, the dark-haired one bared her fangs back. Well, at least they were shifters.
"Charlie!" Max yelled. "Move your ass!"
She knew she couldn't deal with this right now, but she mentally filed it away for later, because she had a fear it would come flying back at her at some point. Charlie jumped, aiming for an abandoned car. Her shoulder hit the roof, and she immediately rolled down and off the car. She tried to shake her shoulder out, but it was too damaged.
"Move!"
Max barked. Charlie started running, ignoring the "Stop! Police!" behind her. She dove into the open front door, and Dutch hit the gas. His turn was so wild, the passenger door closed on its own, and he was moving. The way the car handled, Charlie knew Dutch had picked it just for this sort of thing, getaways, proving once again that he was no good for her sister. He was useful, no doubt about it, but he was also trouble. Grateful for the man's driving skills, Charlie held on as Dutch got them away from the cops before they could dispatch a helicopter to follow them. A good thing, since Charlie wouldn't put it past Max to handle a police helicopter the same way she'd handled the chopper in Switzerland.
"Do you know you've been shot?" Max said from the back seat.
Charlie spun around, resting on her knees to stare at her baby sister.
Stevie, you've been shot?
Stevie blinked at her.
She was talking to you.
Frowning, Charlie looked down at herself, but saw nothing except her wounded shoulder, and she just needed to get Max to yank that back into place for her. Max leaned forward, reached around her, and when she sat back, she held up two fingers covered in blood.
Oh, guess I was shot.
After a moment, she dismissed it with a wave of her hand.
It's a scratch. It'll be fine.
Charlie settled back in her seat and looked at Dutch.
We need to get rid of this car.
Already on it, sweetness.
She gritted her teeth.
Don't call me that.
Honey pie? Lady Divine? Pretty ass?
Charlie glared at him. You're taking advantage of the fact that I owe you, aren't you? Dutch laughed.
Of course I am.
Chapter 11. John Mitchell disconnected the call and stared, shocked, at the closed door leading to the cockpit of the private jet. Being in this business for as long as he had, he'd heard all sorts of things, seen all sorts of things. But this... He looked over his shoulder at the luxury jet. His clients were all the way in the back, spending time in their personal tanning beds. Apparently, they didn't worry too much about skin cancer. John headed through the roomy jet. He hadn't been in a jet this luxurious since his military days when he was lucky enough to work on Air Force One. His clients had serious money and were not afraid to use it. For anything. The two ladies were already out of the tanning beds, both wrapped in white terry cloth robes, their personal staff giving them pedicures and manicures, while others massaged their shoulders.
"Excuse me, ladies," he said, stepping into the cabin. "I have word."
One looked up from her copy of Italian Vogue, and he realized they both had green mud smeared all over their faces. It was not attractive.
"They have her?"
she asked with that Italian accent he was starting to find less sexy and more irritating.
"They killed everyone," he said plainly, "except their cousin and about three of my men who managed to escape."
"How is that possible?"
She threw her magazine, frustrated.
"Why does this keep happening?"
"Calm,"
the other ordered. And to John, she said,
"Now, what happened?"
"I'm not quite sure. My man talked about fangs and claws and giant tigers."
Both women laughed.
"What?"
"I think they must have drugged the men," he reasoned. "Some hallucinogenic. That made it easier to shoot and stab them all."
"So we do not have the youngest?"
one asked.
"No, ma'am, we don't."
The pair stared at each other through all that mud until one shooed away their staff and the other took out a slim gold case. She opened it and pulled out a cigarette, lit it, and focused on him.
"You failed. Again. You and the people you've hired. That makes us unhappy. You don't want to keep making us unhappy, do you?"
"Of course not."
"Then you," she said, pointing her cigarette at him, "will arrange a jailbreak for us."
"A jailbreak?"
"I think that is the term, yes. We will be hiring someone who understands the McKilligans better than you do. And I'm guessing hate them as much as we do."
She took a drag off her cigarette before asking,
"Think you can handle that, Mr. Mitchell?"
"I can handle that."
"Good,"
she said, relaxing back with a sigh.
"I'd hate to kill you, too."
Berg sat on his front stoop, attempting to pry his sister's favorite towel from his dog's mouth.
"Give it to me, now."
His sister had been right. Taking the dog his mother had given her triplets had been a bad idea. Not that he didn't like dogs. He did. Sort of. And he'd grown up around them. His mother dabbled sometimes in breeding the enormous canine so that local bears could have the extra protection. But these dogs were strong-willed and, to be blunt, bitchy. They were often used in Russian prisons to keep the convicts in line.
"She's going to kick both of our asses if you don't give me this towel."
Hi, Berg.
Berg looked up from the tugging dog to see Charlie's sister standing in front of him. Hi, Stevie. What happened to your neck?
Oh, nothing. It's already healing. But I was wondering if you have a first aid kit.
Sure. He leaned back and yelled through the screen door. Dag, get the first aid kit.
Which one?
Dag called back. Berg focused on Stevie again. What do you need it for? A sprain, a cut, your neck?
Gunshot wound, she replied casually.
So casually that Berg didn't realize he was yelling,
Gunshot wound,
to his brother until his brother yelled back,
Who the fuck was shot?
Char was all she got out before Berg dropped the towel and charged over to what the rest of the neighborhood was now calling the Badger House. He ran inside and bellowed,
Charlie!
She appeared in the hallway wearing nothing but her blood-soaked jeans and bra. Her shoulder appeared weirdly fucked up. What are you yelling for? She asked calmly, frowning.
You were shot?
She waved it off. Oh, that. Yeah, I'm fine.
You're covered in blood.
Covered is a bit of an exaggeration, wouldn't you say?
No.
She came close and whispered,
If you're going to get hysterical...
I'm not hysterical. You've been shot.
You were shot in Milan. You didn't get hysterical.
I'm a bear.
Uh-huh.
Which means a 45 isn't going to do anything to me except piss me off.
What about bear spray? Does bear spray work?
Why are you asking?
Why aren't you telling?
Dag ran into the house, a giant metal white box gripped in his big hands. He froze when he saw Charlie.
Oh, my God,
he gasped.
You're dying.
Charlie's eyes crossed. Can we all calm down? There's no need to be hysterical.
How are we hysterical?
Berg asked. By running in, assuming I'm dying.
You are drenched in blood,
Berg reminded her.
And your shoulder looks really weird,
Dag flatly added. That just needs to be yanked back into place. She scratched her chin. And a little duct tape on the gunshot wounds will stop the bleeding.
You're not a headlight on an old Chevy,
Berg told her. She rolled her eyes, but before she said anything, she suddenly sniffed the air. I got a pie in the oven. Wait here. Charlie walked away, and Berg looked at his brother. Together, they headed toward the kitchen behind Charlie, but Berg's dog ran in first, his sister's towel still caught in his mouth. He stopped in front of Berg and stood there, being annoying.
You are killing me. Is that Britta's restoration hardware towel?
Dag shook his head.
She's gonna kick your ass.
Good, Stevie said from behind them, and loudly. You have the kit.
To be honest, Berg had forgotten about Charlie's little sister. Looking at her now, he saw something different about her. First, she was speaking to them without either of her sisters being there. Second, her eyes were open really wide, like she was perpetually stunned by something. Third, back to the talking. She was talking. A lot. And fast.
Thanks for loaning us this first aid kit, she said, taking the kit from Dag. We really appreciate it, but, wow, is it big. I'm really surprised how big it is. Do you guys get injured that much that you need such a big case? We do, of course, but that's not surprising. I mean, just today Charlie got shot, but that was before what happened. Not that I blamed them. It was either them or us, and so her and Max had to kill all those men. I mean, if they hadn't, no matter what our cousin said, they probably would have held me for a long time and killed both my sisters. So, yeah, Charlie and Max totally had to kill them all. Sorry if I'm talking fast. I sense I'm talking fast. But I just took my meds, and they haven't kicked in yet. But when they do, I'll be way calmer. But at least I'm not afraid of you guys right now. But I always feel better after I shift. The problem is that no one else feels better after I shift, right?
Then she laughed, patted Berg on the arm, and reminded him,
Stray dog it!
Before disappearing down the hallway toward the kitchen. Stunned, the brothers stood there, silent. Because, really, what was there to say? Ignoring the excruciating pain in her shoulder, Charlie quickly put her glasses back on before she bent down and, with oven mitts on, pulled the lemon custard pie out of the oven and placed it on the counter to cool. She smiled at its perfection.
"Bear in the kitchen," Max said.
And Charlie turned around, expecting to see the Dunn brothers behind her. But no,
It was that dog.
He's going to eat my pie, isn't he? She asked Max.
If you leave it on that counter, he will.
Charlie moved the pie to the open window, pretty sure the dog couldn't lean that far over to reach it. But that's when Max reminded her, "You're gonna attract bears again."
Damn it!
Holding the pie in her hand, she studied the kitchen. Max looked up from the newspaper she was weirdly reading. Weirdly, because it was an actual newspaper, made of actual paper. Charlie had only seen her use her phone the last 10 years to read anything. Books, magazines, anything. Charlie didn't even know where her sister had found a newspaper.
"You could just get rid of the dog," Max said.
"I'm not killing a dog." Max quickly looked up, eyes blinking.
"I meant throw him out, not kill him."
"Aw, I'm glad that's what you meant," she happily replied. Max glared at her before going back to the paper. That's when Stevie walked into the kitchen.
"Who's killing a dog?"
Stevie looked down at Max.
"Why are you killing a dog?"
"I'm not..."
Max suddenly stopped talking and stared at Stevie.
"Were you outside talking to those bears?"
"No."
"Good. And I'm not killing any..."
"I was inside talking to those bears."
Max closed her eyes and Charlie asked her baby sister, "What did you say to them?"
"I don't really remember because I was talking so fast. And you know what happens when I'm off my meds and start talking. I just go and go and go. And I kind of just kept going without really stopping because you know how I get when I'm not on my meds but I've panic shifted. And I may have told them nothing. But then again, I may have told them everything. I'm really not sure, but..."
With pie still in hand, Charlie ran out of the kitchen and returned to the living room to find both bears just standing there, staring at each other.
"Pie," she announced, shoving it under their noses. "Lemon custard. Bet you two like that. Want it? You can have it. Take it."
Berg gazed at the pie and then her before asking, "So how many people did you kill?"
Charlie cringed. They should have locked Stevie in her room, but she could claw her way out if she was anxious enough.
"It's not what you think," she promised. "So you didn't kill a bunch of people?"
"Not like that. Like we went on a murder spree. They were trying to take our sister, and they weren't afraid to get rid of me and Max to make it happen. What did you want us to do?"
"It's not what you did, Charlie. I don't know what you did or why you did it. What I do know is that you've probably attracted a new problem to you and your sisters."
"A new problem? What kind of new problem?" The two look-alike males simultaneously blew out of breath and looked away from her gaze.
"All right, bitches, we have a problem," she yelled toward the kitchen. "I thought we killed our problem," Max yelled back. "Apparently that wasn't effective. Is it Stevie's fault?"
Charlie frowned at Max's question.
"No. So I can't hit her? Because I feel like hitting her. Don't hit Stevie."
Charlie looked back at the two bears and asked, "So what do we do now?" Berg held up a finger because Dag was on the phone. He grunted a few times and disconnected.
"They're heading this way,"
he said to his brother. "Who's heading this way?" Charlie asked, but the bears ignored her.
"Who did they send?"
Berg asked Dag. Dag scowled.
"A smith."
Berg took an abrupt step back like he'd been struck.
"We have to get them out of here." "And take them where?" "Someplace with a lot of people. Smiths don't like to strike with an audience."
Knowing the brothers were so busy talking to each other they were completely ignoring her, Charlie headed back into the kitchen. Max had poor Stevie in a chokehold and was telling her,
"Sleep, just go to sleep. Shh."
Charlie walked across the kitchen and placed the pie she was still holding onto the windowsill. "We have to get out of here," she told her sisters.
"Why?"
Max asked, still choking a pissed-off Stevie. But despite Stevie's very narrow frame, she was really hard to choke out, like most honey badgers. The way she was clawing at Max's arms, though, that was all cat. "Apparently we've gotten some attention from... I don't know. The bears, maybe.
They didn't specify, but somebody. Did they give you a name? All they said was a Smith, which I found quite vague. There are two sets of Smiths in this world, Max said. Charlie frowned. I'm sure there are more than two. One set are Wolverines, she went on, but they'd never come after us because of Dutch. And then there's the Smith Pack that, I believe, is crazy enough to come after us. Smith Pack? Charlie thought for a moment. Didn't Gramps mention them once? Max nodded. He said we were never to date or have pups with them, or he would, without a doubt, disown us. Disown us from what? He got nothing. Just his love. Oh, shut up. She looked at her still bleeding shoulder. I need a clean T-shirt and jeans, and would you let her go? Max released Stevie, who spun around on her knees and began slapping at her giggling sister. You were such a bitch! Stevie, Charlie barked, pulling on a fresh pair of jeans and a navy blue T-shirt. We don't have time for this. Stevie got to her feet, pointing her forefinger at Max. I hate you. I'm trying to help you. Shut up! She faced Charlie. What's happening now? Find your backpack. We're getting out of here. Okay. When it came to being on the run, Stevie had learned over time to simply follow orders. She pointed at Max. And you can bandage up my gunshot wounds on the drive out of here. The bears walked into the kitchen as Max reached under the kitchen table and pulled out a sawed-off shotgun she'd stashed there, along with many other weapons she had under the kitchen table, in the cabinets, under and around the beds, beneath the dining room table, the living room couch, the end tables. Max didn't leave what she called basic home defense to chance. The bears froze in the doorway.
That's not legal, Dag noted.
You're so cute, Max said with a smile, pushing past both males.
We have a place you can go, Berg said to Charlie.
She shrugged. What's the point if they're just going to chase us down? Better to face them here.
You don't want to face down a Smith.
I don't know what that means.
And my goal, he went on, is to work out an agreement that will allow you to stay here safely, without worry. But I can't do that if you're having a gunfight on the street with the Smiths.
Max walked back into the kitchen with a box of shells, although the shotgun was already loaded. Max just wanted to make sure she had extra. We could win a gunfight.
Berg glared down at her. That's not helping.
Max grinned and looked at her sister. What do you think? Charlie dug her hands into her hair and said to Berg, I hate dragging you deeper into this.
Berg patted her shoulder. That's sweet, Charlie. But who gives a shit right now? You've got a Smith on your ass.
Is it really that big a deal? Dag leaned over his brother's shoulder.
It's that big a deal.
Stevie, her backpack securely on, her eyes wide, pointed at the window behind Charlie. Someone just took your pie. Charlie glanced back and saw that, yep, her pie was gone. The dog? She asked. Nah, Max pointed. He's under the table. After he opened the fridge, took out leftover steaks from yesterday, and dragged the entire pan under the table to eat. Berg crouched and snarled,
Get home.
The entire table moved a few feet when the dog stood up while still under it, lifting it off the ground with his back. Stevie grabbed and held it, allowing the dog to keep going. What's his name? Max asked Berg.
Who?
The dogs.
Oh.
You didn't name your dog? Charlie demanded.
Can we please go? Berg asked. Before the gunfight?
Shaking her head, Charlie took a 9mm out from under the kitchen table and tucked it into the back of her jeans. She pulled on a light denim jacket to hide it and, tisking the entire time, walked past the two bears, her sisters following her.
You're welcome, Berg said from behind her.
I didn't thank you yet, she reminded him. And keep that attitude going, I may never. The women walked out of the kitchen, and Berg scratched his head. That's when he saw his brother staring at him.
What? What the fuck have you gotten us into?
Dag asked.
What are you talking about? There has to be an easier way to get a date. That's not what this is about. We're being helpful. Do they need help? Because they don't really seem like they do. With Smiths coming here, of course they need our help.
The sister suddenly walked back in, Charlie still leading the way. Car just pulled up in front of the house, Charlie said. Dutch is gone. We'll need to steal a car.
I can do that, Max announced, marching by.
Berg grabbed the shotgun she still held, quickly aiming it toward the ceiling. Once he was sure no one would accidentally get shot, he calmly asked,
"Can you grab something a little less conspicuous?"
"Oh, sure," she said with a big, friendly smile. She released her grip on the shotgun and moved to the kitchen table. She reached under and came out with a .45.
"A Desert Eagle is less conspicuous
than a shotgun?"
"Yeah." Berg continued to stare at her until she rolled her eyes and said, "Fine." She dropped the gun on the table and went to the cabinet under the sink. She pulled out a strap with several holsters on it. Each holster held a knife. Stevie lifted up her sister's T-shirt and Max strapped the knives around her torso. Then she tacked a few more holstered knives to her jeans, and Stevie let the T-shirt drop.
"Okay," Max said with that pretty smile. "Let's go. I've got a car to steal."
"Or we can just borrow Mrs. Fitzbayer's car. Nice elderly sow who lives one street over. And she lets me and Dag borrow it all the time."
Max's smile faded away.
"Fine. But just so we're clear, I find that really boring."
"Sorry."
"It's all right. I'm just letting you know."
Max walked out the back door, leaving the brothers with Stevie. She gave them a small half-smile.
"Sorry about earlier," she said, "but my medication has finally kicked in. I'm calmer, and I amped up the dosage a little bit, so I don't find you nearly as terrifying."
"Great, Stevie."
She cleared her throat.
"But should you suddenly decide you have to eat me, I have bear spray in my backpack, a proprietary mixture of my own that will burn the eyes from your head."
She patted Berg's arm.
"I'm not saying I'll use it. I'm just saying it's there, in case you have any terrifying ideas involving me. Okay?"
Berg nodded.
"Okay."
"Excellent. Very good."
She turned and rushed after her sisters, her overstuffed backpack so heavy and Stevie so thin it looked as if she should topple over. But she didn't, because none of the McKilligan sisters were quite what they appeared. Berg didn't bother to look at his brother. What was the point? He didn't need to see him to hear him clearly.
"I'm telling Britta what an idiot you are."
Chapter 12 Deanne came down the stairs of the large house and went into the kitchen where Malone was.
"Looks like they're gone."
Malone grinned.
"You're gonna love this."
She suddenly tipped the kitchen table onto its side. Holstered guns and knives were duct-taped to the underside.
"That seems like a lot."
"You think?" Malone laughed. "These are your kind of girls, Smith. They've got weapons." She raised her hands, four fingers up, and made a circle in the air, all over this house. In cabinets, behind doors, under beds, next to beds, in beds. "I'm trying to figure out where they got all this shit."
"We need to find these girls."
Malone lifted her nose, sniffed the air, then opened her mouth wide, pulled back her lips, and stuck out her tongue. She'd done it before when they were tracking. She called it a flamin' response. But Deanne just called it nasty, because that's what it was. Just nasty. Malone closed her mouth and made a smacking sound.
"There were bears here," she announced.
"There are bears everywhere. It's a bear neighborhood, genius."
"I mean, there were bears here, in this space.
And one of them was hot for one of those girls."
"How do you know that?"
"Pheromones."
She made that tongue sucking against the roof of her mouth sound again. "I can taste it in the back of my throat." Deanne held up her hand and told Malone,
"You cats are just plain nasty."
Malone walked across the room and stared out the window.
"If he likes her, he'll want to protect her."
None of those girls need nobody protecting them.
You know how guys are, though, especially bears.
She looked at Deanne over her shoulder. And there are two places they'd probably think of taking them. But one of those places they can't risk yet. So that leaves the other. She nodded. Yeah, I think I know where they took the girls.
Malone was so cocky, Deanne couldn't help but ask.
What, Malone? You fuck a bear on the regular and you think you know what all other bears will do?
Malone thought a moment before replying. Yes, yes I do. And do you know why, Air Bud?
Because I am awesome.
She giggled.
God, I love me. Don't you love me?
No.
Go, Berg said to Charlie from the front seat of Mrs. Fitzbayer's Hummer. We'll park the car and be right in. Don't talk to anybody or go anywhere. Just stay in the lobby, okay?
Okay.
Charlie opened the back door and climbed out of the enormous vehicle. Of course, after seeing the elderly sow who owned this behemoth, she understood why the woman needed it. She had to be nearly 7 feet tall. Charlie had made the assumption she was a lonely old maid. But nope. She was a widow whose polar bear husband had been nearly 8 feet tall, and together they'd had 6 giant children who were scattered all over the world trying to help with global warming to assist the full-blood polar bears trapped on melting ice caps. She was really starting to find this shifter life interesting. Living with a pack that barely noticed her, was terrified by Max, and a little freaked out by Stevie, hadn't really shown Charlie the entire shifter world that existed out there. All this was new to her. They made their way into the sports center's main lobby. Kids with basketballs or ice skates pushed past Charlie and her sisters, all rushing to their practices. There were sports stores of all kinds and restaurants on the first floor. The ice rink was also on this floor. But the basketball courts, gymnastic practice rooms, and some admin offices were up on floors 2 through 18. There was also a state-of-the-art high-end gym that probably cost a small fortune to join, and a bunch of sports physicians and surgeons who probably only worked on Olympic athletes and pro ballers.
Wow, Stevie gasped, her gaze raised to the high ceiling. All this for sports?
Sports is big business, Charlie noted, and this is what big business buys.
All this money, but scientists still have to beg for funds in the search to end cancer.
She shook her head, lips pursed.
Disgusting.
Now that Stevie was back on her meds, she was once again rational, if a little nervous. Thankfully, Charlie wasn't so easily spooked. She didn't have time, always too busy keeping her sisters safe or stopping them from doing something stupid. A group of laughing girls walked by, roller skates hanging from the bag one of them held.
Hey, look, Max pointed out. Derby girls.
You want to play derby? Charlie asked, surprised. Max was not exactly a team player.
Oh, God, no. But I do love watching them beat the shit out of each other.
She began to follow.
Come on, let's see if we can find out if there are any bouts coming up.
We're supposed to wait for the guys, Stevie reminded her.
We'll be gone 2 minutes. Come on.
They followed the fast-moving women expertly cutting through the crowd until they disappeared into a stairwell guarded by 2 security guards.
Okay, we're done, Charlie said, grabbing Max's arm and holding her back.
Why?
Whatever is going on back there, I don't want to know.
Max pulled her arm away.
Don't be such a drag.
How are we supposed to get past security? Stevie asked.
Leave it to me,
Max said with way more confidence than either of her sisters felt for her. She sauntered up to the 2 guards and smiled.
Hey!
The 2 men looked at her with no real expression. The nose of one twitched, and he suddenly opened the door, holding it for them. Max walked in, and Charlie ran after her. Stevie slipped in right behind.
What was that?
Charlie demanded, catching her sister's arm.
Apparently I'm really good at being sultry.
Charlie stopped her sister and pulled her around to face her.
But honey, you're not good at being sultry.
She's right, Stevie agreed. Actually, your sultry is almost threatening.
Gee,
Thanks, Max muttered. She shook her head. Look, let's just go explore a little. It'll take forever for the guys to find a parking spot around here. 5 minutes.
I'm concerned the stairs only go down, Stevie pointed out. Are we going to a morgue?
Why would there be a morgue in a sports center? Charlie asked.
Because Soylent Green is people.
I am so sorry I let you see that movie, Charlie sighed.
Come on, come on.
Max started down the stairs, and they followed.
Aren't you a little concerned, Charlie asked, that there was security at the door?
Why would I be? They were shifters.
They were?
Max stopped and faced her.
I thought you got your allergy meds.
I did, and Stevie introduced me to a new nasal spray sent from those German doctors. So far, it's really good.
And yet you couldn't smell. I don't go around smelling people, Max. Sometimes they smell funky.
You don't go around smelling. It's just... you just...
Stevie walked past them and headed toward the door on the next floor.
She doesn't get it, Maxie. I don't know why you go on so about it.
But we're shifters.
Would you stop screaming that? Charlie snapped. We don't know who's around here.
Hey, guys,
Stevie called out. She now stood in front of the open door, staring out at something.
You may want to check this out.
Charlie went down the stairs and stopped behind Stevie. She was taller than her sister, so she could look over her head. It was another lobby, like the one on the first floor. There were restaurants, stores, and people dressed for the sport of their choice. But there was a distinct difference between this lobby and the one on the floor above. It was the energy. And it took a moment for her to understand what this all reminded her of. But then it hit her, like a lightning bolt. A watering hole in Africa, one where all the local animals had to go to get a drink. Lions, gazelles, giraffes, wild dogs. Predator and prey all meeting in the same place because they had no choice. And although these were all predators, many of them had their cubs and pups with them. The way the mothers watched out for their offspring, keeping them close, gazes darting around, searching out any danger, any risk, ready to attack at a second's notice, reminded Charlie of going to the mall with her mother.
They're all shifters,
Stevie said, fascinated, her mouth slightly open.
All of them.
I've heard about places like this,
Max explained.
Been invited to a few, but never went.
Why? She shrugged.
Seems weird. Being around a bunch of people where the only thing you have in common is that you can shift into an animal.
I get the appeal, Charlie said. Kind of like that time I went with Gramps to that family reunion. Being around people who connect with you on a very specific level can be nice. Seeing all those different shades of brown in one place was very comforting, and none of them were shifters because it was my great-grandmother's side of the family. But I still felt connected.
I go to Chinatown, Max stated flatly, and I don't feel connected.
Aw, sweetie,
Charlie put her arm around Max's shoulders.
That's because you're you.
Excuse me,
a low voice said from behind them. Charlie and Max separated, and three very large men walked by. One of them smiled at Charlie.
Hey, beautiful.
Hi,
she replied, unable to stop a surprised chuckle. Max rolled her eyes.
Oh, my God. Really?
You can't let me have that. Cute guys notice me, and you can't let me enjoy the moment?
Cute guys notice you all the time.
No, short guys notice me, and guys who like big tits. Neither ever look me in the eye or call me beautiful.
He did. He's 7 feet tall. You could give him a blowjob without getting on your knees.
The point is, Stevie cut in, that you already have a tall guy who thinks you're beautiful.
Then she smiled. Weirdly. Charlie stared at her baby sister.
What are you talking about? You know.
Stevie fluttered her eyes, which was, again, weird.
Sweetie, you don't do coquettish well, so stop that.
Come on.
Max moved around them and out the doorway. Let's check this out. We have to meet Berg and Dag, Charlie reminded her. 5 minutes. No. Let's just get back upstairs and there's a Starbucks. Ooh. Charlie stepped past the doorway. Coffee? Max pushed Charlie toward the very large Starbucks. Go get us coffee and something with honey. Cinnamon for me, Stevie corrected. Realizing she'd never get her sisters out of here anytime soon, Charlie went into the Starbucks and got in line. Might as well get herself a cup of coffee to soothe her nerves before she went to track down Berg and Dag. She didn't want them to worry. As it was, she couldn't believe how amazing the Duns were being, going out of their way, constantly, to help her and her sisters. How was she ever going to pay them back? How was she ever going to pay back Berg? She'd never known a guy like him. He was just so nice. And she really liked that. She liked how nice and responsible he was. Only her grandfather had ever been that responsible. But he was also grumpy. Sometimes very grumpy. Not Berg, though. He was just a really nice guy. Who also happened to be really hot. Charlie rubbed her forehead. She had to stop thinking about Berg that way. He deserved better than McKilligan crazy in his life. He was too nice for her. What was she going to do with a nice guy but ruin his life? The line grew even as she moved forward, and it didn't take her long to realize that the woman standing behind her was sniffing her. Not enjoying that one bit, Charlie looked over her shoulder and asked, "Can I help you with something?" The woman was black, long, and lean, in a designer dress that looked perfect on her. She was beautiful, but Charlie found her bright gold eyes disconcerting, especially the way they were locked on her, and the way her nostrils flared as she leaned in to take another sniff did nothing but make Charlie want to slap the holy hell out of her. "You're bleeding," the woman finally said. "I've got my period," she lied, hoping that would end the conversation. It didn't. "I'd believe that if I didn't smell the gunpowder. When were you shot?" Charlie glanced around, but no one seemed to be paying much attention to their conversation. "Don't worry about it," she insisted. "I got it handled." "Doubt it." The woman suddenly grabbed her upper arm, and it took everything Charlie had in her not to pull her gun and shoot the female directly in the head. "Come on." "Look, lady, I'm a doctor. We'll get it cleaned out and wrapped up in a few minutes, and you won't get the fever." "I don't get the fever." Charlie knew about the fever. She'd been hearing about it ever since she'd moved in with the pack. The fever that allowed shifters to heal themselves in about 24 hours. A fever that Charlie and her sisters didn't get. Instead, they healed in their own unique, individual ways. Ways she was not in the mood to discuss with this beautiful, lean woman who was making her insecure about her own looks. "Sure you don't." The woman pulled, and gritting her teeth, Charlie let the stranger take her out of line. What was wrong with her? If this had happened among full humans, Charlie would have just handled it, like she handled everything else, quickly, brutally, and with no remorse. But she wasn't doing that here. Maybe because a fellow shifter wouldn't be so easily put off. She couldn't scare this woman with a silent stare or a low-volume growl, and it wasn't until this moment that Charlie realized how frustrating that was. As the woman led her through the crowded lobby toward a set of elevators, Charlie glanced back in the hopes of spotting her sisters. But nope, they'd wandered off as she'd known they would. Like two exploring bear cubs wandering away from the mama bear. She expected no different from Max, but she often forgot Stevie's problems with crowds, in that she had no problems with crowds. Her panic disorder reared up when she felt trapped and alone. But Stevie didn't feel alone in crowds. In her mind, she could call for help and someone would come running to her aid. That's what allowed her to play in front of vast crowds, to lead entire orchestras, to wander around Paris in the springtime while ignoring the beauty and the danger of the city all around her. Once, Charlie and her sisters had been separated at a peace rally in England that turned violent. When the three sisters met again, Max had a bruised face and swollen knuckles. Charlie had a bruised throat and broken ribs. And Stevie was singing Give Peace a Chance with a bunch of hippies. Untouched, unbruised, happy as hell. But one bear in the yard and Stevie was up a tree, screaming and unable to breathe. Weird. They stepped into the elevator and went down a few floors. The woman still had a grip on Charlie's arm while she held her phone in her free hand and read emails. Look, Charlie tried. I appreciate... Nope. Nope what? Just nope, the woman said, not even looking up from her phone. Whatever bullshit you're about to tell me, nope. The doors opened and they were moving again. Only this time, as they walked, people greeted the woman. Hey, Doc. Looking good, Doc. Marry me. I'll be by around 2, Doc. My leg is acting up again. The woman nodded and smiled as shifters of varying sizes greeted her. But she never stopped and she never eased her hold on Charlie's arm. Well, at least she was a doctor. Of some kind. The woman dragged Charlie into a very active medical facility, filled to the brim with shifters of varying sizes. Hey, Doc, the receptionist said. Your 1 o'clock is here. Ask them to wait, would you, Sal? I've got an emergency. Yeah, but... The doctor didn't wait for the receptionist to finish. She simply took Charlie into a room and over to an exam table. She briefly left and returned a minute or two later, wearing a lab coat with a stethoscope in the pocket and a blank chart. A nurse followed in behind her. Okay, hun, the doc said, opening up the chart and beginning to fill it out. Let's get that stuff off and see what we're dealing with. I really can't afford health care, at least not health care here, so I can just move from that spot and I'll have Nurse Konami put you in a headlock that will make your eyes bleed. Charlie glanced over at the nurse. She wasn't a particularly tall or brawny woman, nothing too threatening. The doctor said, still not looking at her. Nurse Konami may be full human, but she is married to an Asian black bear, and she deals with football and hockey players all day, every day. Men and women 2 to 3 times your size are terrified of her, and for good reason. So if I were you, I'd take off your clothes, put on a gown, and shut up. Charlie knew she could still fight her way out of here. If nothing else, she was armed. But Berg had brought her here. He must have some connection to the place, and she wasn't about to embarrass him. So as much as she didn't want to, she'd suck it up for the very nice bear who'd been helping her and her sisters. She pulled off her light jacket, T-shirt, and bra and sat there, refusing to put on the robe, partly because she hated those things, but also because she'd been busy putting her gun under her jacket so the 2 females wouldn't see it. By the way, my name is Dr. Davis, and let's get a look at... She'd finally looked up from her paperwork and stopped when she saw Charlie sitting there, topless. So you're not shy, she guessed. Nope. Excellent. She walked over and carefully pulled off the gauze that Charlie had stuffed in and around the wounds on her back. Huh, she heard the doctor say, and Charlie looked at her over her shoulder. The doctor's expression changed a bit, her brow pulling down in concern and confusion. She wanted to step away, and Charlie didn't blame her. You really don't have to do anything, Charlie explained while the doctor stared, or gawked. It'll work itself out. My dear girl, this is not going to work itself out. Actually, it will. You just have to wait a little bit. It's in the final stages. The final stages before your death? That made Charlie chuckle. As if my life could ever be that simple. She looked around the room. Got a magazine I can look at while we're waiting? Max put a baseball cap on Stevie's head and stepped back. Perfect! Not really. The hat was way too big. It was apparently bear-sized and covered half of Stevie's face. Embroidered on the hat was the carnivores, which seemed really bold to Max. Just putting out there that they were all meat-eating predators and everything. It was true that Max had had more interaction with shifters outside the pack than Charlie or Stevie, but those shifters were Dutch and his family and their few friends, Wolverines. Like the Honey Badgers, the Wolverines weren't involved with the Shifter Nation, as they called it. They preferred to be around full humans or, even better, no one. They could be quite introverted. Not unpleasant, rarely rude, but introverted. So seeing all these shifters in one place, hanging out, pretty much getting along, was unusual. Interesting, though.
I can't see, Stevie complained.
But you look adorable. She took a picture with her phone and texted it to Charlie seconds before Stevie slapped the hat off her head. Laughing, Max showed the picture to Stevie.
Adorable!
Do you ever get tired of mocking me?
No.
I'm going to look for a bookstore.
Why?
Stevie patted her shoulder. You make me sad. Do me a favor and keep an eye out for Charlie. If we go missing, she will flip out on us.
I know, I know.
Max went through the sports store and found a few shirts and caps she wanted to buy. But it had been a while, and she thought it was best to go track down Charlie before Charlie had to track down her and Stevie. Their big sister's anxiety went through the roof when she couldn't find them, and Max didn't want to be responsible for the ulcer she was sure Charlie was going to get if she didn't relax a little. Max walked back to where she'd last seen her sister. She stood outside the Starbucks, and, going up on her toes, she tried to look over the heads inside the open cafe. So many tall people. Frowning when she didn't see her sister, Max decided to go inside for a closer look. But as she began to move, she heard a screeched,
"Livy!"
And then something landed on her back. Without thought, only instinct trained into her since the death of her adopted mother, Max reached behind her, grabbed hold of whatever had her, lifted up and over, and slammed the person onto the floor. She rammed her foot against a chest to pin her prey to the ground and pulled out the blade holstered at the back of her jeans. She raised the blade over her head, about to drop onto the prey beneath her to keep it pinned in place. But a hand grabbed her wrist, halting the blade mid-attack and yanking her back and away. The grip on her wrist was firm. So firm, Max knew she couldn't break it. So she turned her body, dislocating her shoulder. She ignored the pain and unleashed the claws on her free hand, burying them deep into someone's side. She heard a grunt of pain and finally looked up. And holy shit. Up. Until she was gazing into bright blue eyes surrounded by white hair. Max hissed, unleashing her fangs. In return, the man unleashed his own, and when his two eye teeth continued to grow until they reached past his square jaw, like a pair of tusks, Max decided she was out. Fuck that shifter shit with their honorable fang-to-fang, claw-to-claw code that Dutch had always told her about. Max yanked out her claws, causing blood to arc out of the male's side and splatter several onlookers. She spun again, the pain in her shoulder very close to making her pass out. But she clenched her jaw, and when she faced the man again, she quickly sized him up before kicking him mid-chest. Shocked by the power of the blow, he finally released her, sending Max reeling. She hit the ground, rolled backward, and stood. By then, she had blades in both hands. Her wounded shoulder couldn't move much, but she could still have his eyes out and his throat cut before the pain got so bad she'd wish that someone would just kill her already. She cracked her neck and started forward, but two adorable bookend bears slid to a stop in front of her, both with their big arms out, matching eyes wide in panic.
"No, Max," Berg said. "Don't do it."
Max narrowed her eyes, not because she was plotting something, but because her shoulder was killing her. But the two males misinterpreted.
"You can't do this," Berg begged. "Please, just walk away."
"Max?"
Max looked away from the two bears and saw her cousin standing a few feet away.
"What the fuck are you doing?"
Livy walked closer, shoving the two bears out of the way.
"Starting shit again?"
She growled before yelling.
"Again?"
"It wasn't me. It was..."
Max started to point at the man who was behind the bears, bleeding from his side. He'd done the damage to her shoulder, but he hadn't actually started anything. Max looked over the crowd, finally pointing at a black woman in roller skates.
"It was her!"
Livy turned and saw her cousin's entire body go tense.
What did she do?
She hugged me from behind. Livy rested her hands on her hips.
I thought we talked about that sort of thing, Blaine.
Okay, this looks bad,
the woman called Blaine said, skating forward, focused on Livy.
But I thought it was you.
Max stepped up beside her cousin.
Is that your excuse, that we all look alike?
What?
Blaine's eyes widened in horror.
No, of course not.
Really, Blaine? Livy asked. Because it sounds like you're saying we all look alike.
Of course, they were cousins, and Blaine hadn't actually seen Max from the front. She was just going on body size and the short hair. But that didn't matter, because this chick was just too easy to fuck with. Hell, Max could do this all day.
Because we're Asian? Max asked. Of course not. I mean, my husband...
What? Max pushed.
You about to tell me that some of your best friends are Asian? Actually, my best friend is... Look, I'm just saying that,
Her brown eyes narrowed.
You two are fucking with me, aren't you?
Max started laughing. She couldn't help it. Who was this little weirdo? The big guy who'd gotten between Max's blade and Blaine's sternum stepped up beside Blaine and glowered down at Max.
You tell him, honey,
Blaine said.
My husband.
Max knew she was looking at a fellow half-Asian, so she was kind of expecting a talking to, as Charlie liked to call her lectures. To be honest, looking at the size of the guy and seeing the blood dripping onto the floor from the side she'd ripped open with her claws, she'd gladly welcome a talking to rather than a beating on. Still glowering, Blaine's husband demanded,
"Do you skate?"
Yeah,
Blaine agreed.
Do you...
She turned to her husband.
Does she skate?
We need a new enforcer, and she's mean.
Max grinned.
I am mean.
I think she's a serial killer,
Livy added, for some reason.
Look at that smile,
she said flatly, pointing at Max.
That sick, disturbing smile.
Max tilted her head to the side and tapped Livy on the elbow.
Thanks so much, cousin,
she said with as much sweetness as she could possibly manage. Frowning, Livy stepped away from her.
See what I mean?
She was going to kill me,
Blaine accurately pointed out to her husband.
She wouldn't be the first. Where's your sister?
Berg asked Max.
Which one?
Don't play word games. Excuse me, Britta,
Blaine's husband interrupted, glaring at Berg.
I'm trying to have a conversation.
Berg's eyes briefly closed, and he gave a short shake of his head while Dag smiled a little and looked away.
I am not Britta, you Cro-Magnon. I'm Berg. That's Dag. Is there really a difference? Yes,
Berg insisted.
Yes, there is.
The man shrugged.
I don't see it.
Berg's jaw tightened in frustration, and Max wondered how many times he'd had this conversation with the Tusk guy. Clearly, more than once.
Let's get your sisters and go,
Berg finally said, focusing on Max. Max shrugged.
I have no idea where they are. Go find them,
Max. Yeah,
Blaine's husband said.
Go find them.
He reached out and grabbed Max's wrist.
She'll be at the training rink.
I can't believe this,
Blaine nearly shouted.
She tried to kill me, and now you're going to test her out to be your enforcer?
Her big brown eyes welled with tears.
I am the mother of your children.
He faced her, but still didn't release Max.
I don't understand the connection.
I should be more important to you than hockey.
He looked off, blew out a breath.
You should.
Max bit the inside of her cheek to stop from laughing. Blaine stomped one skate-covered foot before skating off, a group of derby girls following her. The giant glowered down at Max, but now she saw a hint of a smile around his eyes and at the corners of his mouth.
I'm going to pay for that later.
Berg watched Max follow Bo the Marauder Novikov.
"Does he really not know that we aren't Britta?"
Dag asked. Again.
"If it doesn't involve hockey or that one woman who tolerates him, I don't think he notices."